Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home, each week we take a look at the latest news, maybe break down some tones, or to give you the lowdown on the low end. Chris, my darling, how are you?
I am very good, Mr. Dibble. I am currently balls deep in packing for a little work trip. But lots and lots of packing. I don't know what you're like, but I am the worst at packing for a trip in terms of overpacking. I need to nip that in the bud very quickly as an adult.
But hey, this is second trip out music related thing of the year, right? Tour first, then this, and packing gear with you.
Far away trip, I would say yes, it is. I'm going to Turkey. I'm going all the way to Turkey. I know. Well, at the time this comes out, I will have already come back. Or maybe not come back at all. Touch wood.
Oh, God.
I know.
Let's leave that in there.
I'm going to Turkey to play a covers gig, which is very exciting. Just completely stumbled all of that point that I was going to say. So to conclude, I must be the best bass player between here and Turkey.
I think that's what that means.
That's what it means,
and,
right?
And also, they could get any bass player in the country. So does that mean you're the best in the UK?
It must be. I think I saw it on the Downbeat, actually. When Craig Reynolds got the job as the Straight From The Path drummer, he had to arrive at the airport or something to do with his work visa with a letter that might have been from the management or the label or something like that, which is basically a signed document saying we've exhausted all options of people who could do this job who are already US citizens. So we've had to go internationally to get this person. Because if you don't have that, apparently the immigration or whatever it is will go, why couldn't you get an American to do this? Because now you've had to bring someone into the country that doesn't have to be here.
Wow.
But so using that logic, I am the best bass player in Turkey, despite never being there. The best bass player in the UK, because they could have asked anyone in the UK, but they asked me. And then I'm the best bass player anywhere in a straight line from the north of England to Turkey.
Wow.
So that rules out Spain, because that's not in a straight line, but North France, Belgium, Italy, maybe a bit of Switzerland. Yeah, I am the best.
Take all of that, they exhausted all the options and ended up with you. And
that's exactly.
Fantastic.
Or maybe what I'm going for is maybe no one else was available.
Everyone said no.
Everyone said no. No, I don't want to go to Turkey.
Wow. Well, that's very exciting that you're...
It is.
International gig. That's sick. And, further proof that you're good at what you do, Chris. This is your job. That's amazing.
Oh, geez. Thanks, Johnny.
Shall we jump into a question?
Yeah, I think we should. What question shall we start with? We'll go with this one. This is a nice and easy one. What bands are you currently into? And what are a couple of your all-time favourite artists? We can rack that bit off really quickly. My three favourite bands in order of all time are Nickelback, Metallica, and Girls Aloud. And I will stand by that point wholeheartedly. What about you, best of all time? And then we'll jump into, people you're currently into.
That was a lot to unload then. Wow. For me...
From a Nickelback?
No, absolutely nothing. No.
Good.
No. For I mean, top ones on the spot are Paramore, Lower Than Atlantis, and and then the third one kind of chops and changes, I'd say.
Okay.
With based on who I'm into at midnight, I suppose. But I'm going to give my top two to those ones. In terms of listening, like what I'm listening to at the moment, for sure, a couple of like smaller bands I'm really into at the minute is a band called Dead Pony from Scotland. Awesome female-fronted band. Yeah. Very, very good. They just toured with The Blackout.
That's where I saw it. Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And they're who else? So good. And Mouth Culture, who are, I can't remember where they're from, Midlands up north somewhere. Everything past Birmingham's north for me. So somewhere around there.
Correct.
And I saw them supporting a band called Teenage Wrist, who I really like, in Bristol. And I was like, I didn't know who was supporting. I didn't look it up beforehand, and then got there and was like, I know this song. And I was like, wait, I heard this on Spotify yesterday and I loved it. Oh, it's this band. You know, like song after song, I was hearing ones I recognize. And now I've just been on a full like listening spree to them. So I say definitely those two at the minute are big ones for me. And then I'd say Bill Murray, incredible, listen to a lot of at the minute. Not the actor. And
I did wonder that.
Yeah. And also, I suppose a controversial one, but not really, Willow Smith. So
Willow Smith.
I mean, biggest Nepo in the game, right? Obviously. But they released an album, when was it? 2022, called Split. It's not called Split. That's a single. It was 2022. Anyway, it's called Coping Mechanism. That's it. And I heard one song on it, and it made it into my Spotify Wrapped last year. I was a bit late to it.
Because like, you listened to it that much.
Yeah. Because I was like, this is great. And it's her kind of like pop rock kind of album.
Okay.
Fuck me. People are sleeping on that album. Holy crap. It is great. It's so good. I'd really recommend giving it a listen. I think there are times when the production leans a bit too heavily into the vocals, where some of the instrumentals should shine a bit more, but I can kind of tell that that's because it's Willow Smith. It's not, here's this band.
Of course.
But overall, sounds phenomenal, I think. So that's what I'm into right now.
Interesting. What a surprising entry. I had that last year with the song Boys by Lizzo. I listened to it so much that it ended up in my Spotify Wrapped. But my Spotify Wrapped is a dumpster fire, because it's like I have to listen to music for work, in air quotes.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm running through like apparently my most listened to album is Hot Fuss by The Killers, and it's like, it's not. I just have to practice.
Yeah,
Mr. Brightside,
it's all Foo Fighters and Nirvana for a long time. I'm like,
yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, you'll have the exact same problem. And then like my top listened to artist is my own band. Ugh.
Of course, that's really cool.
Yeah, great. But yes, for me, I would say so. I've recently re-got back into Queens of the Stone Age again. I'm really enjoying listening to Queens of the Stone Age. Like, obviously, I've listened to them on and off, like, my entire, like, teenage and adult life. But then it's only after I went to go see them, I was like, oh, no, I'm actually going to start, like, properly, actively listening to this band. And I'm really enjoying it. Recently done the same thing with Machine Head, of all things.
I thought you could say Machine Gun Kelly, then.
No, unfortunately not. No, on this occasion. No, Machine Head. Why did they... I think they came on a gym playlist when I was in the gym, and I went, oh, I haven't listened to Machine Head in ages. And then, pain and suffering. Really enjoyed that. Nice bit of early 2000s, heavy. And then the last one, bit of a new addition for me, and you might laugh, but you're wrong. Really, really into Jelly Roll. Like,
okay.
Have you heard of Jelly Roll?
I've heard of them, but I couldn't tell you a song or like
okay, what okay.
The sound is.
So, like, big guy, face tattoos. I thought it would all be like kind of, when I first heard of him, I thought he was like SoundCloud rapper. And I was like, no, I'm not bothered. And then a few other things popped up. Like, my girlfriend told me about him. He appeared as a guest on a podcast that I listened to. So I was like, oh, you know what? I've heard good things. I'll put like the two most listened to songs on his Spotify and I'll give that a gauge. And I really liked those two. And then I put on an album in full while I was driving back from an audition. And the album's called, let's load that up and have a quick peek.
That's a shit album name.
Yeah, you're telling me. It's called, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Whitsitt Chapel, maybe?
Yes.
A word beginning with W and the word chapel.
Whitsitt.
Like Cool Whip. Yes. And banging. The whole album's like, I don't know, it's 43 minutes. Every song's really good. Like, really good. It's like modern country kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then there'll be two or three random songs where it's like drum machines and like 808 bass synths. And
nice.
There's like three tracks on here that I really want to do covers of. Like, they're really good. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm well into it.
I've just added it to my queue on Spotify.
I recommend you go for the track, The Lost, to start off with.
That's what I was looking at when you said that.
There we go. That's very like radio rock kind of thing. But I put it on and I was like, this is like 10 out of 10 driving music. It's great.
Are we talking Sunday drive in the country or pedal to the metal?
Ooh, good question. I think they're a bit more of like a, I pictured myself driving down like a big freeway in like some sort of like muscle car, when in reality I was driving down the M62 having coming home from Sheffield at 11 o'clock at night. But same energy. It was very nice. I enjoyed myself. The 45 minutes flew by quite quickly and the song's very good.
Beautiful.
I recommend.
That's all you can ask for, man. Nice. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for letting us know what you're into right now and some more times. And thank you for the question. Should remind people, if they do want to submit questions for this very podcast, you should do so over on our Instagram page. Handle is @InThePocketPod. Make sure you go and follow us on there. That's probably where we're the most interactive with people and where we ask for you guys to comment your questions. So make sure you head over there, give us a follow, and look out for that question post that comes out before we record the episode. Shall we move on to our next segment?
We should.
Fantastic. And that next segment is the news. We haven't done a bit of news in a little bit of time, so I'm excited to dive into some releases that have happened over the last couple of weeks, maybe. But yes, I'm going to start things off with something that we kind of covered last week a little briefly, but it was one of the things that was launched slightly after. And that is the Court Space 5. They've now unleashed it into the world. We got to see it in a bit of like a pre-glimpse when we saw it at the guitar show. So that was very cool. And it is essentially their brand new headless bass. I'm going to get my share my screen right now so you guys can check it out as well.
Please do. It's probably worth noting that when we saw this at the guitar show, you were all over this.
Yeah.
I didn't even touch the thing. Like, you were all over it and you played it. I've not played it yet. Like, I've not even tried it, but
you should have
exactly
jumped in.
Yeah, you selfish little monkey. But it's okay because I played the Rickenbacker and you didn't, so
yes,
I guess we're even.
That is fine.
Which, by the way, if I'd known how much it cost when I played it, I would not have played it.
How much was that one for?
$4,500.
It was a 70s one.
Yeah, when, damn, I was playing it, I was like, this is probably $2,000, something like that. It's still pretty expensive. And then I looked on the website and was like, my God.
Jesus.
But was lovely. And this looks lovely too.
Yeah, 100%. So this is like 80s callback, you know, headless basses were big back then. In this absolutely insane, like, translucent black finish, or the green one we've got here. What I really like about these basses is like the carve that we've got here, like with this kind of pale bit poking through underneath. It's kind of like it's been sanded away very evenly along it. And I think it's a cool feature. I like it. It's got Bartolini Mark 1 pickups with a Mark bass preamp. Now, one thing, you know, I'm often a bit hesitant when it comes to basses like this with basically Bartolini pickups. I've never been huge fan of. I've not tried like the full fat ones, but yeah, I've never been massively into them. But this sounds awesome with the Mark bass preamp in there. Really, really good. It's got the 7-piece roasted maple, walnut and purple heart neck, which is crazy. And yeah, it's, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I want one of these now. This looks amazing. So yeah, super, super excited to check these out and do a review on one. They're not that expensive. They're retailing for...
No, they're not, are they?
This is $800 at the minute. So really, really affordable for what it is. And it's, you know, it's quite a niche. So anyone that's looking at the kind of Ibanez EHBs, this is a slightly cheaper alternative that I think kind of looks a bit more conventional.
It's quite a bit cheaper, isn't it? Isn't the,
I think
the
so.
EHBs, aren't they over a grand?
Yeah, I think they're like 1,200 at least, pretty sure.
Yeah, so this is like, you know, £300-500 cheaper.
Yeah.
Which is quite a bit. And this does look great in person. And you can put it on a headstock display as well.
Yes, that's one thing they wanted to show off, wasn't it? And I think that's great. Can confirm, you can, because I've got one here. It's good times.
Here's one I prepared earlier.
A quick view of this one, if you want. There's the neck that we got on it. Woo! Damn. It's a looker.
Gosh damn.
Yeah. Sounds amazing. Plays great. Have a listen to our last episode where we checked out if you want to see and hear more from this bass. I'll be waiting for the review to come out on that one. But yeah, very, very cool. Going to move on. Before I do, any other thoughts about Court and this one?
I didn't get to play it, but I can confirm it sounded very, very nice when we were there. And obviously the clip that we put on the old Instagram sounded fantastic as well. This is a winner for me. Like, you know, I know headless basses are like a bit controversial, but I like a headless bass. I want one at some point. Like, it's not like a essential thing for me, because like my basses are very much like tools in a toolbox for me. It's like, does this do this sound? Does this do this sound? Does this do this sound?
Yeah.
This doesn't really do that for me, but aesthetically, I think it's really cool. I can see myself getting told off at gigs a lot for bringing this, which makes me want to bring it even more. No, this is a winner. It looks great. It sounds great. Amazing price as well for what it is. Super high quality. Like, you could see it in person. The finishing looked absolutely lovely when we saw it. So yeah, no.
Yeah, it's kind of like a satin matte finish on top, which is very, very
absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, which is not normally something that you see. Normally, you would expect at this kind of price range to be kind of like a glossy finish, or it would be like quite a, if it was like kind of like a quilted maple kind of finish, you could tell it would be like one of the cheaper cuts. Could there be like a cut down the middle of it, or it wouldn't be symmetrical, or, you know, all these kind of things. But it's a really good quality instrument, and I am very surprised it's this cheap.
Yeah, I didn't expect to be bowled over by a headless bass, and then I saw it. I saw their announcement, saw it at the show, and was like, holy moly, here we go.
Wow.
I
said, so that... good you turned into Chris Walken. Wow, look at this headless bass.
Headless bass over here.
Headless bass.
I thought it was red hot. And you know what else is red hot?
Wow.
The brand new red hot Longhorn bass.
Wow.
I just watched the enthusiasm get sucked out.
Well, I look forward to disassociating for the next 10 minutes. Right, go on, continue. Go on, off you pop.
Right, to its credit.
God, it's so ugly.
So, the Longhorn is not for everyone.
you fucking telling me.
I will say, I think this might be one of the better looking Longhorns. We've now got an F-hole in this one and binding all around with the lipstick pickups. They say, it can do a huge... It's designed to deliver a huge array of bass tones. I doubt that. But okay.
Does it really? It does on and it does off.
Yeah. Volume 50%. $600 this one.
Okay.
You know, it's a short scale like the other ones.
I was just about to say 29.75 inches. I wonder what made them decide to disregard the quarter of an inch.
Yeah. That's where that makes all the difference, I'll have you know.
That's the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
As we know very well.
Yeah. Black die cast, master volume and tone knobs. Oh, tone knobs. I was expecting that to say...
plural.
Thingies. Yeah.
And so there's no volume control or... No, that can't be right.
Volume and tone knobs. Yes.
Okay. And then there's a pickup selector switch.
Pickup selector, which is just a three-way. But yeah, that's it. It's a new version of the Longhorn, and it's giving you the Longhorn, I can tell.
Yeah. You know that bit in Top Gear where James May talks about the Dacia Sandero for ages?
Yeah.
And then he says it's been delayed, and Jeremy Clarkson goes, Oh no! Anyway.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. The only person I have ever seen ever play a Dan Electro bass and look cool is the bass player from Maneskin, because she is well cool. And she's really good as well. This is minging. It physically upsets me. Like,
yeah.
Although I will say the fretboard access is fantastic. Like, get all the way up there.
To a fault, almost.
All the way, yeah, but this is gross. Dan Electro, I know you obviously want to send me one of these.
Pronto. Can you
not? Would you mind not, if that's okay?
You want a short scale eventually, right?
I do, and it won't be this.
I feel like this is the final end of your journey, your conquest to find the one. That's it.
It's definitely helping me explore what avenues I don't want to explore. So, you know, realistically, I'm going to end up with some sort of like Mustang. I can see it's going to be something like that.
Well, there we go.
That was easy, wasn't it?
Nice.
This, if you like this, have a word with yourself.
Jesus.
In the mirror.
Yeah. Well, let's swiftly move on then to
Probably best.
That might be more interesting, but almost might not. Not sure.
Oh, okay, here we go. This higher or lower?
Right. This is the new Line 6 Pod Express bass. This came out of nowhere. Apparently, it was.
It did come out of nowhere.
Like, I thought this was. I found out about this after the guitar show, and I was like, oh, they didn't bring this along, or did they? I didn't see anything about this.
I don't think they did.
No.
I don't think, because I feel like it would have been thrown at us, you know, in terms of like, it would have been on display as a new product. But then again, how much time did we really spend at the Line 6 bit? Because we did whiz past them last minute and go, hi, can we have a noodle?
Yeah. Not long.
No, we should probably spend there a bit longer considering like, yeah, I really think that they, you're Mr. HX Stomp, at least in the UK, I think. But yeah, it looks great. This looks great.
Yeah. So this is essentially like I don't want to say dumbed down version of the Stomp, because it is and it isn't.
It isn't, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's how somebody said it to me, and I was like, ooh, not quite, because it's not really using the elements of the HX Stomp. That's trying to emulate other things. This is emulating its own thing that's been famous for a while. The Pod, you know, Line 6 Pod range has been going for years. And they've, if you remember, do you ever play like the Lowdown amps, Line 6, like LD50 or whatever?
No,
like
the only Line 6 amp I've ever tried is the greatest amp of all time, the Line 6 Spider Free.
Oh, absolutely. This was essentially the bass version of that.
Yes, and I am fairly certain I've still got mine somewhere.
Sick. Mate, that's content right there. Plug your bass into that.
Oh, Insane Channel. Play Crazy Train on it.
Yes. So this is like that, the Insane Channel. It had different modes, and that's exactly what the amp on like the LD, the Lowdown Line 6 ones had. It was like kind of this presets that you've got here. So you've got round, grit, vintage. These are your amp modes. We've got compressions. We've got synths, distortions, and modulation delay on, off, and then just a tap important here. So one thing that's interesting about this is that it's just kind of presets. There's no kind of like tweaking. It's just like, this is the sound, this is the sound. So I don't actually know how useful this will be in a practical sense. It is a weird one because it's not like the HX Stomp where you can open it up and like tweaky tweaky and use HX Edit. It's just kind of all, that's it, you know? You can tune things slightly, apparently. So it says here, blah, 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 amp model, amp encoder, when holding the Alt buttons, this one in the middle, and turning the amp encoder, an effect knob, LED segments indicate corresponding value. So there are things that you can do to it. Sounds like it. I need to do a bit more research on this one, but I'm interested to see how it sounds. I'd love to check one out. But yeah, it's kind of a simpler version with some slightly different kind of preset sounds within it. Well, that's weird. Look, Top Gear. We just said about that. Yeah.
No. See, proof our phones are listening to us. To be fair, that came up on my suggested thing as well. I was going to watch that. It's about how the person who did the Top Gear theme for the show did it. So that's quite cool.
Well,
yeah, I see. So I think there's an advantage and a disadvantage to the way this is set up. The advantage is it's very much like, I want some fuzz. Here is some fuzz. You know, done. You know, nice and quick. But the disadvantage is you have little to no control over the fine tuning, which to an extent though is actually, I kind of like that to an extent, because at the moment I'm playing the Origin bass rig a lot for a lot of my like working gigs, as opposed to the Quad Cortex. And the main reason why I'm enjoying it is I put the pedal down, I plug it in, I set it how I want it, and then that really is it. There's no other things I can touch, whereas I can get lost in the Quad Cortex on a gig too easily. Like, I'll be in soundcheck and I'll be like, oh, you know, maybe I could drop the compression down a little bit, or maybe I need a bit more mid-range, maybe this needs to be more scooped. And it's like, I'll get bogged down in those minor details that in the bigger picture, one, no one notices, and two, is a distraction from the actual gig itself. So this is good because you don't get the ability to fall into that paralysis of messing with too many things. And this is good as well, if you're a bass player who you might not have a lot of experience with effects, you might not be playing bass for a long time either, you might be someone who really likes simple to the point stuff. So like, I could see like someone who's not been playing bass for very long, or like a teenager who doesn't really want to, like, maybe they don't want to spend £150 on a fuzz pedal, but they would like to see if they like fuzz.
Maybe.
Could have something like this, which has a bit of chorus. You know, there's some amp models. There's even some synth stuff you can mess around with. And you can just go, oh, well, I want a synth sound for my band. You know, I'm 16 or something like that. You can just click it on and go, well, that's cool. And then you've got a thing, as opposed to having to learn how to create a synth tone in a HX Stomp, a Quad Cortex, buying a Boss synth pedal. You know, all these things are quite expensive and quite complicated, whereas this is nice and simple. So I can see why they've done this.
Yeah, for sure. And it is different from, because they've got they've got another HX Stomp version that's like the HX One, I think it's called, and that's essentially like this kind of size unit for Helix, where it's just got like very limited controls, no screen or very small screen, things like that. So you can kind of, they're kind of filling all the gaps in terms of like what kind of players would want their products, which is quite cool.
And another thing, I think this, a new problem that I've discovered as a musician is, I need to get this on a plane, which is a new problem I've discovered. And I'm putting everything in my backpack and it's going on the plane with me, because I ain't putting that in the hold. Absolutely not.
No.
So something like this, I could actually find benefit in, because I could have a tuner, this, and I could get through a gig. Absolutely. Easy. You know, there's an amp sound, and if you can do presets, I could have a drive sound and that's it. You know, just those two, jobs are good, and it all fits in a backpack. But then again, the HX Stomp fits in a backpack, and the Quad Cortex apparently fits in a backpack. I am experimenting with that this afternoon.
Big backpack.
Well, not that big. It's not that big of a unit, but it's on a pedal board at the moment. So it's like, do I take it off the pedal board? Yeah. Don't really want to do that. You know, all these kind of things. But no, this looks decent. I actually like this.
Yeah, I think I'd be interested to try it out. No DI out though.
Of course,
because no product like this has a DI out for some reason. Line six, eight DIs.
Yeah, but is it like a balanced line out?
I could find out for you and let you know, but I feel I might be here scrolling for a while.
Because that's not the end of the world, but I understand the frustration.
Yeah, for like a base product like this, it's kind of the standard what you'd want to have.
Yeah, but I guess that's going to increase the size, isn't it? You know, to make room for that DI output or something. Yeah. But I have always wondered why the HX Stomp never had an XLR out, but I guess you can just run it into a passive DI and then you're good to go anyway.
Yeah. But would you like to hazard a guess as to how much this pedal is?
£350.
Absolutely not. No.
Oh, how much is it?
It is £200.
Ooh.
Well, it's on Back's shop right now. You can get it for 180, so it's under £200. 199 is the retail.
That's not bad. I think that's very well priced.
Yeah, for what it is, you know, most distortion pedals are like kind of around that price nowadays. So,
well, I mean, what you'd consider to be like very good bass distortion pedals, you know, you aren't getting nearly anything from Dark Glass for that money, you know.
No, you're going to get their noise suppressor.
Exactly, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, you will get it.
You will. But, you are noisy.
But yeah, there we go. That is all the news we have for this week. Shall we move on to the next question?
We should. I will reload the questions up because I opened Amazon Prime and realized I needed to close that.
You silly sausage.
I know. Shall we? Okay. Question numero uno. Which brand have you never tested, but you've always wanted to?
Oh.
I'm going to extend that and also call it a which brand / company have you never played, but you want to? Just because you test more stuff than I do. But I still want to open that question up a little bit wider.
Yeah, that's how
Your
I
turn.
Kind of wrote this one. I'd like you to go first on this one. I did a lot of speaking a minute ago.
Very well. Well, mine's nice and easy. I have never played or even touched a Spectre bass. Ever.
Wow.
I would like to give that a go because I know some people who absolutely love them, say they're the best thing since sliced bread. I know some people who say they're absolute rubbish. And then I know people who used to love them and now don't and vice versa. So they seem to have like, it's not like a universally believed thing. Like, you know, where like, you know, pretty much everyone says a Music Man sounds good, you know, or a jazz bass sounds good. But really polarized, you know, like I've seen some people go like they're absolute crap. They're not worth it at all. Some people said the best thing since sliced bread. So, I'd like to give one of those a go, actually.
That phrase, sliced bread, like what happened there? I'd love to be the first person that had sliced bread. Was it like... like a mind-blowing moment.
Yeah, I feel like the origins of it are more complicated than that, which is why while you talk about your answer to this, I'm going to Google the origins of that question.
Wonderful. Yeah, Spectre is a good one. It's one of those ones that like you'd think, oh yeah, like Spectre, they're like super popular. They do affordable and expensive, so they'd be popular to find. But actually, they're quite difficult to find, I find. Like out and about in shops and stuff, so it's not that common to get one to try. I've only tried like two, I think, before. And I haven't found like one that I was like, damn, I really want this, even though I really want one. Which is weird. For me, I would quite like to play and I don't mean to say this from like a highbrow perspective of like, oh yes, you know, it must be this because it's just because of the fact that I've not tried one before, so I want to see what the fuss is about, and that is Fedora. Fedora.
Fedora.
I tip my Fedora to you. Fedora. I'd like to play just because they're like seen as like the holy grail. That, like, wall and alembic.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Like, I'm so much more interested in trying a wall than any of those other bases. Yeah,
yeah. That's that. The wall thing.
The
is
wall,
like,
wall,
the wall, wall. Christopher Walken.
Wow, it's back again.
Walken. That's totally a thing. Like they're awesome. I've only played one before. One wall. Played it at Base Bros, which was very nice. I didn't get enough time with it, and like it didn't blow me away at the time, but like I've had the like filter based preamps before, and like I definitely want a bass with that in again. It's so much fun to play with, and you can get some really unique and fun pokey tones with that type of thing, so I'd really like that at some point. But yeah, that wall for that kind of thing is great. I want to see what the fuss is about all those kind of other big ones. Alembic, I haven't played an alembic before actually, so I would actually like to try that, to be fair. But I'm not really interested in them like, oh yeah, I really want one down the line. Oh, but I'd like to just see like what is the standard here, what is like
see what the fuss is, because they're meant to be like, yeah, like, you know, Fedora is meant to be this top of the range. I see them and they do very little for me. Like, yeah. I look at them and go, that just screams, this is an expensive bass.
100%.
Like, okay.
Particularly cool. Alembic. They look horrible, I think. So don't at me. But I think that, like, and for me, that does a lot to me as a player. Like, I don't see an Alembic pick it up and go, oh yeah, I'm really inspired to play this. Like, number one, because they're so expensive. Yeah. I'm like, oh. Number two, like, I don't know, they just don't spark anything within me. I'd really like to play a Kiesel.
Me too, actually. Yeah,
yeah. I've always thought they look and sound great. They do like some good headless models as well. Like a Kiesel would be a really cool one. Like a Kiesel, kind of almost like a hype souped up jazz bass, I think it would be a cool version. Off there, I think that would be really, really fun. I think that's it for me. A big one was Rickenbacker until I tried one for the first time last year, I think it was, which was okay. You know, quite a long time to wait. But and you played your first one as well.
Yeah, I did. I never played one before. Not quite to the same degree, but I've never tried like what I'll call like a full fat alpha bass, for example, as well. I've played the what was the sort of like
Feral?
Mini company. Yes, I played one of those and thought it was really cool, but I've never played one of the proper, you know, these are one of our proper custom bases. Like, never tried one of those, so I'd like to change that at some point in the future. But well,
I get mine, that will change. You can play
over it because you're going to give it to me. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Yes. But yeah, I think the wall one is a great idea. I've never tried one, and considering like Justin Chancellor is one of my favorite bass players, I would like to try one. But yeah, Spectre is the main one. Never tried one. Never gone anywhere near one. So giving one those that a go. But then again, at the same time, I hear that not all Spectres are created equal. Like, you know, some of the mid range ones aren't actually that good. And then you've got like, you know, do you want the PJ? Do you get the humbucker style things they do? the Rebop, all these kind of, you know, the NS2s, what's good, what's not. There's a whole, they're not exactly like a one, we do one bass. They cover so much ground.
And you're right, they do vary, because like some of the more affordable stuff I've not been super into before, or like they don't do the Spectre thing, like the super sparkly, high, toppy tone. Like, if you listen to Don Broco, listens to the intro of Super Love, that song,
like,
that's Spectre tone written all over it, because he uses, uses the Euro 5, which is what I would like to try. Humbuckers. Yes. Active Euro, five string Spectre. I think that's
what I want to try. I want the proper. It's like Mike Kroger from Nickelback plays like a big five string Spectre with the, that must be a Euro as well, because it's got two big massive pickups.
Yeah,
and when he plays, it's got that kind of like Spectre-y active mid range, and then all that kind of like spank on the top end. And it's like whoopah. It's like, that's what I want to try. I don't really want to try like a, is like a passive PJ, and it's like, no, I'm not interested in that. I want the, what is the Spectre sound?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm with you on that. The last one I'll mention is, because you said about Alpha, and it got me thinking about custom builders, is Serret.
Mm.
Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Love to try one. I was on a live stream last night with Bully the Kids and Low End Lobster and a couple of other peeps from America, and they did like a Serret off, and AMP the AMP the bass player was there as well, so Andrew got his two Serets out, and like everyone was showing off what they had, and I was like, oh bloody hell, like, so good.
Here's my £250 Squire. Hello.
Exactly. So these are, you know, made me very jealous, but I've always been a big fan of theirs, and would love to try one out one day, and who knows. But that's it from me.
Yeah, I agree on the Serret front. Absolutely. They always look really cool. And Andrew's is so cool. He says, like, I want to give one of those a try. And I think that's it for me as well. Absolutely. Not a brand, but I wouldn't mind trying a Dingwall Super P. I'd like to give one of those a go. A little Super PP. But yes, apart from that, I feel like we have all of LeGrounds covered.
Lovely. Well, then let us move on to the next segment.
Yes, let us move on to the next segment.
And it's my favourite segment, because it's called That Tone You Own. It's back, baby. We don't always do this when it's just the two of us, but thought we'd bring along a little Tony Wony to have a little listen to this week. And I have brought along it's a tone that I did for a reel on Instagram recently, which I quote, called a vintage modern tone, just comprising some vintage elements and modern elements to kind of mash together some pedals that you might not have heard together before on the internet. So I'm kind of building this series of videos I want to do. There's basically just that, like, weird sounds together that make a good tone. Gone down well. So I thought I'd talk about it a bit more on here. Let's have a listen to it first, then we'll talk a little bit more. So there we go. That is the tone. It's essentially an Origin FX bass rig, the Fender one, with my Fender P bass. So two very like vintage sounding elements, then just smashed together with the Alpha Omega from Dark Glass. So like super ultra modern like sound, all blended into that. And I really like the idea of like a vintage modern tone. Like, you don't have, there's no rules. You don't have to be like, oh, well, for this sound, I've got these vintage elements, so I have to have the vintage drive with it as well. Like, I don't know. I think it's interesting to create some new sounds, blending together those elements. What do you think?
I agree. I very much enjoyed how, I liked how you could really tell when the Dark Glass pedal appeared in the chain, because it was like this, like the bass man on its own sounded like, the black panel, sorry, sounded like really great. Like, it was a really nice bass tone. And it's just like, like just like rage, yeah. Like, but in a, you know, in like a somewhat usable way, like it was, you know, might have been a bit too gritty for my liking, you know, for me, but I thought it sounded well good. I really liked how it was like just a super angry P bass tone, like that, yeah, would work really well in like any big modern rock sound. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what it's kind of going for. And like you say, like maybe turn the drive down a little bit. I feel like in big speakers, it comes across as a bit like bigger in the bass rather than like just like, ah, is this clang?
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think that any drive pedal or one that, like the Dark Glass stuff, sometimes you turn it on, you're like, here's the Dark Glass sound. Whereas I like it when it's a bit more transparent, being like, oh, you can still tell it's a P bass underneath. And like you said, it's a gnarly P bass sound. And I think that's one thing that kind of vintage side does really well. You know what that is, and then you just drive it up with that. That doesn't take over the character too much and still makes it recognizable underneath. So yes, that tone, like for the, I just want to say how good these products are. That took 10 seconds to tune it, to put together.
Yeah.
Like, and that was it, you know, and people were asking for like settings and, oh, how'd you do this? I'm like, literally just twiddled the knobs for a few seconds and then, yeah, done. That was it. There's nothing extreme going on there EQ wise. So yeah, loved it.
Yeah.
That was it for my tone you own this time. I'm definitely going to experiment a bit more with that kind of sound. The black panel, like they said in the reel we just put out with them when we spoke to them last week, it is the dark horse. Like, it creeps up on you and you're like, oh yeah, I forget how good actually this pedal is. Because everyone goes for the SVT one, which is also amazing, which I'm currently using full time. And I keep being like, oh, maybe I should slip the black panel back in as well. So we'll see. Watch this space. But there we go. Shall we move on to our final segment?
Let us do just that. I've lost the question.
Pause for effect.
Pause for dramatic effect. This was a decent question. I liked this. It's so decent that I can't find it now. Wow. Where's it gone? Wow. Have you got it to hand? Because it's actually disappeared on my little list of questions, I meant to say. Yeah, I can't find it. That's weird. I'm on our Instagram and I just can't, the question's disappeared. Oh,
What are you more concerned with when learning covers, getting the tone right or the parts, the original song?
That's the one. So yes, what are you more concerned with when playing covers? Are you getting the tone right? Is it getting the parts right? You know, are you interested in sort of getting close to the original song, etc., etc.? Good question. This, there's a lot to it, and I think for me, there's a lot to unpack here. But I think the main thing really depends on how much time do I have to cover this material, and how important is the accuracy? Because, let's say you're doing a Carly Rae Jepsen song, and you found the proper bass part, and you're looking through it, and this is for a wedding band, and there's a specific fill in the bridge that isn't super important. It's not like a standout part. It's just a fill the bass player's done. I don't think you really have to learn that. I think, you know, if you can learn it quickly and you're happy, go for it. But if it's just a decent fill, but it's not like a key section of the song, for a wedding, I think you can completely skip over that. If you're then playing for, if Carly Rae Jepsen rings you, and then you're actually, which Johnny is picturing now, and he's over the moon. But if you're playing that actual song for that artist, or you're playing for, I don't know, a Carly Rae Jepsen tribute, or it's a wedding with a very, very attention to detail orientated wedding band, and you've been given a lot of notice to learn the material, then I'd say it's more important for the fills. So I guess it depends on the time and how much detail you think needs to be put into these parts. And your gut will tell you that as you get more experience with learning songs, I think.
Yeah.
How about you? Because it's interesting to ask you this question, Johnny, because I can be playing a completely different set of music every week. You, though, gig more regularly with the same set of material, but it is still covers. So how much attention to detail do you put into with these Nirvana and Foo Fighters songs?
Yeah, I really like this question because we come at it from two different perspectives, but I think could...
But also the same.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, as a tribute act, you know, some people would say, well, obviously you need both. You know, you need to get the sound right and it needs to be bang on exactly the same because you're a tribute. I kind of sit on the fence with this. Sit on the fence is the wrong term. I think that there's some truth to that. But echoing what you said, I think you can have some creative liberties and not do things bang on what it is where it's not essential. So that doesn't mean I'm missing out every single fill. Obviously, I try and do as much as I can, but there might be the odd little bit that, I might throw in my own little bit here, or something that we do differently live that they don't do if we extend a section slightly. You know, we might do things like that. Luckily for us, Foo Fighters do this all the time. They extend sections out, they put their own bits in.
Yeah.
And so we base that off of what they're doing, but also might like jam a little bit in those bits. You know, it might not be bang on exactly. And I think there is some beauty to that. And it also shows what am I trying to say? Like what kind of thing you're going for, really. For us, we go for accuracy on the whole, but not like down to the minute detail.
But not into like the minutes.
Because I'd much rather perform on stage and give someone a good show and make it energetic and fun rather than worrying about, oh, this one fill I didn't do right. That being said, like on like Smells Like Teen Spirit or In Bloom, let's say, both very like bass orientated verses, I'm going to do that bang on. If it's a really important bass focus bit that is famous in the song or is very noticeable if it's different, yeah, fine. But I think to myself, it's someone in the audience going to notice if this bass fill is slightly different. 90% or 99% of people, absolutely not. Whereas if it's a very important bit or it messes up the rhythm of the sound or something, you know, it changes things up too much or is distracting, yeah, they're going to notice that. So I take it from that perspective. So you might be expecting my answer as a tribute act to be like, yes, you have to get it bang on. But I actually don't think you need to get it bang on if it takes away from your performance or from what you're doing to an extent. So that would be my answer. I'm interested to hear your opinion then on tone, because I imagine from your perspective, you're playing so many different artists that tone kind of, you're just going to go for one sound, right? With some elements thrown in?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't really think about the tone part when I'm learning these songs. I mean, I go for like ballpark things. But to be honest, the main parts are really DI kind of sound or bass amp kind of sound. And then it's like drive or not drive, flats or rounds. And then it's like the only other two variables on that are like chorus or octave. Yes. And even then I'll only do it if it's like a kind of, oh, I really do think the song is losing something now if I don't have the tone really close to the actual thing. So I think maybe like a good example of this would be, what's a good one? Never Too Much by Luther Vandross. The part is the part, and the bass is very loud in the mix of that song. So it's like the little slap pops and stuff like that, or the little runs in between parts, or even the start of the song, which has that famous like boo as the bass slides down the neck. You know, I think those are really important. Like anyone who likes the song Never Too Much, even if they're a musician or not, knows the song starts with that boo, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
Bum, bum. Bum, 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 bum. Bum.
Yeah.
Ba-bum. Ba-bum, ba-ba-bum.
And that's affecting the core rhythm of what everyone's moving to, you know?
That's super important, like, in terms of, like, the parts. So for that, it's like, yes, I have to do that. But, like, the tone, if I'm approaching that song from a work perspective, so for me, it would be like, right, I really do think I need to do this with rounds, not flats. I could do it with flats if I have to, but it's not going to sound as good. And then the rest really is, I don't think really that important. Like, I've played that song with a more DI kind of tone in the quad cortex, which is kind of just like a fat DI. I've done that through like an SVT emulation. I've played that gig with where I've put chorus on it because I think it's just a bit more 80s and a bit more fun. I've done it without. I've even played it with a compressor, without a compressor. I don't think those parts are super vital, but you've got to get the part right. The tone is less important. And then maybe, okay, here's a good example. So I've played a wedding with a band that I've played with a lot where just coincidentally I brought my bass that had flats on it, and it just didn't work. Like, it just wasn't the right sound for them. So now I've learned that when I gig with that band, I always bring a bass with rounds, and I always go through like an amp emulation with a little bit of drive. And I never change that for the whole set, because their set is all very kind of like moderny rock stuff. Like, you know, like there's bits like Dakota by Stereophonics, Mr. Brightside. They do the Status Quo version of Proud Mary, which is a lot more lively. You know, we're doing Johnny B. Good. We're doing all those kind of things. And even though Johnny B. Good is a, would have been recorded with a bass with flats, it would have been like a DI kind of sound, in the context of that, what I'll call client, because they are hiring me to play bass, I've done it and it sounds like shit. I've got to have like an amp with a pick sound for it to glue in with what they want.
Yeah.
So I don't think the actual super minute things are that important. Like, you know, I could do your Foo Fighters gig and show up with like a really good DI tone, clean, and probably get through it. However, it would have to be round wound strings. Flats would just sound absolutely awful, I think, playing like Foo Fighters and Nirvana songs.
Yeah.
So it's not about every micro decision, but you've got to decide the important things like amp sim, DI, rounds, flats, drive, and then songs that actually like if I was doing Sledgehammer, you can't not do it with an octave. You need to do it with an octave. You'll get through it without an octave. You're not going to ruin it, but you're leaving so much on the table if you don't turn the octave pedal on.
Yeah. And it's like, what is the audience going to recognize that's different from the original?
That's the main thing, because it's not about if the keyboard player looks over to you and goes, oh, I noticed you put chorus on that. Like, that is fun, but it's not important. Whereas if the audience goes, oh, like, you didn't, oh, that bit's not there, that is the actual bits you need to be thinking about. You need to be thinking about big picture, not just, you know, like, oh, well, am I playing a jazz bass just on the neck pickup? Or am I playing a P bass? Those things are depending on the context and the detail of the client. Like, your tribute band could be one of those tribute bands that's like, no, we pride ourselves on being bang on, and that is the USP or the main drive for that band.
Yes.
Other bands are like, well, no, we're not going to do the absolute minute details, but it's going to be a good performance, and both are good, but some people pride themselves on, you know, it's like when you see tribute bands where they all look like the band members and they're all like, you know, to the point where like the
guitars are the same signature.
Yeah, the same, you know? Same guitars. The guitarist might like have the same haircut deliberately, or they might put a wig on if it's longer. Like when you see like an Iron Maiden tribute and they're all properly dressed like Iron Maiden. That's one level, but then it might just be we do 80s metal songs and there's some Iron Maiden in there. Oh no, the bass player's got short hair and plays a jazz bass. Oh no. You know, those things, it's different from band to band, I would say.
Absolutely. And that's so true. And like what I like what you said in there is about ballpark, you know? Like,
yeah.
Foos, I'm playing a P bass, and I've got an Ashdown cab, and like, you know, it's very like, well, it's very rough, but I'm kind of tweaking it as I go, and
yeah. But you're in the same direction as well, though, because like Nate Mendel plays a P bass.
Yeah,
he does use Ashdown equipment, so it's like you're in the same direction. But it's not like you've gone, okay, so I play bass in a Foo Fighters tribute. I have to go buy the Nate Mendel P bass,
yeah,
and I have to go buy the Ashdown
ABM,
CTM,
like, yeah,
something well, like that, or big ABM. You don't have to do that part. But if you were like the UK's leading Foo Fighters tribute, and you play to like you know, like the really big Pink Floyd tributes that play to like a couple of hundred people to a couple of thousand people when they go out.
Yeah,
the guy who's meant to be David Gilmour really needs to be using a black strat. Like that's kind of, but that's that level. That's all the way up there to the point where you are trying to be as close to the original act, but at the level like I play at with weddings or you play at with your tribute band. That would be a bit overkill to the point where it's just unnecessary. Like the clientele and the people you're playing with won't even notice.
No, and we're not like, we're there to have a good time. It's not a full time thing that we're trying to be like, yes, we have to be this.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a bit of fun and a bit on the side for us kind of thing. So it's, we'd much rather have the fun time, work the crowd. Like we'll speak to the crowd and do stuff. Like if you'd be really strict with it, then it would only be the singer doing that, you know, and like it would be totally different. So
yeah, like I've
energy.
I've debt for tribute bands where like the singer is like put the accent on, you know, for the talking and stuff, like, you know, they're from Newcastle and they're putting American accents on, you know, those kind of things, or they are like dressing up, or like, you know, I've been told to kind of like, you know, oh, can you bring a bass that's similar to like what Dougie would play? Or, you know, like, or some other act like that. And it's like, that's one thing. But then I've played with other acts that I kind of like, well, as long as the songs sound right, it'll do.
And that's the thing. Because, like, with tone, it's all subjective to the room as well. Like, you're going to have to be able to adapt, especially as a bass player. Often you're working around two guitar players, or in my case, two guitar players. They're doing what they're doing, right? I'm going to have to work myself around them and to the room.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be a little bit different, and it's never going to be like, yes, this is the sound, you know, bang on, here we go.
Exactly.
So
and if you brought, and if you brought Nate Mendel's bass rig to the gig, it's not going to work, because like he's built a rig around playing to 10, 20, 30,000 people on a big stage with their own engineers and monitors and a tech, whereas you are sticking all your stuff in your own car and driving it there and back, you know, you can't. You know, and then it's like, you know, it's what do you like? Like, you know, Nate Mendel might not like the Ashdown triple shot, but you like the Ashdown triple shot. So it's like, well, I want to use it because I like it.
Yeah, I think to an extent, and my guitarist said this to me, of just like, because I was like, oh, this doesn't quite sound like what they're doing. And he's like, it sounds good. So just do that. Like,
it sounds good. It is good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
exactly.
just go for that. Don't worry about that. And that's, and I like that. That it's not too like, well, we've got to get that exactly bang on, etc., and just go ballpark. So that would be my advice for that kind of thing. Other thing, when you're playing covers like you are, like you're not going to be right. Okay, well, this next one is on the record. They use a 5-string active, so now I'm going to switch over to that. I'm going to have to switch the amp settings for this. Like, you're not going to be doing that on the fly, so you can't really afford.
You don't
to do
have
that.
For the gigs I do. That's just not feasibly possible. Like, no. I've done it where, you know, let's say it's free 30-minute sets, and the first set has a lot of acoustic songs, so I've brought a bass that will suit playing with an acoustic guitar a bit more, aka flat wound strings. I've done that, but changing between songs, you know, at certain levels, that's what you would need to do. Like, if I was playing in like a, you know, super high-end cover band, like super high-end, or a incredibly specific tribute to a specific artist, to the point where it's like, if this was done on a P bass with flats, you need a P bass with flats. Okay, now this one is done with a mute. Let's say you're like a top of the range Michael Jackson tribute, and it's like, right, we're moving into the Jackson 5 section of the set, but we're talking like playing to several hundred people, and it's like big money is
big
flying
money
around. Then it's like, right, okay, we'll load up the Motown style preset on the quad cortex. I'll pick up the bass with the flats. we'll play that. Okay, now we're moving on to like all the 80s stuff and we're doing Thriller and Beat It and Smooth Criminal. It's right. Okay, Flats is no, not the right move right now. Put the Flats down. Move on to like the super bright active DI bass tone and then we'll cover that ground. That's different. But like I said, it's all about scale. And it's just, you just got to go where you go. If you're playing covers in a pub or a bar with your mates, just like, as long as you've got the chords right, and if there's a standout bit, like, you know, if you're doing Sweet Child of Mine, for example, I really do think you should learn the intro bass line. That's quite important.
It's how iconic the piece is, you know.
Exactly. Like, but once the drums come in and the actual song starts, you don't have to have it note for note. You need to be following the chords. You need to be sort of like making sure you're following the gist of where it's going. But if it's just your standard, we're playing with drums and guitar, as long as you're following the chords and everything, that really is the level of detail you need to be at.
Mm. Yeah.
As long as you're playing it right.
Yeah, not like, ooh, like ugly, bad notes, you know, that sound
wrong. No, exactly. Like, you know, there might be a fill in verse two that goes into the chorus. And it's like, I would argue you don't have to have that note for note. You really don't. But then again, like I said, if you're playing in a very successful Guns N' Roses tribute band where they are, you know, it's their full-time source of income and people pay, I don't know, £20 to go watch them or something like that.
Yeah.
Then me as an audience member, I would be like, guy who is playing Duff McKagan, I need you to nail this. I want to see you nail it. Because that's what I'm paying for. But if I'm at a wedding, I don't care if he's not playing the fills, right? It's like that's too detailed for what is necessary for the environment and the clientele.
That's it. Think about the audience. What do they want? What are they going to notice?
Like, what are they not going to notice?
Exactly, more importantly, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. I think that's you know, there's so much we could say about this, and I think we'll leave it there on that one. Thank you so much. And thank you so much to everyone that has submitted their questions for this week, that has reached out to us to share the love on Instagram and subscribed on YouTube and things like that. If you want to, you at home, if you want to support this podcast, you can do so by rating us 5 stars on your listening platform of choice. It really helps something to do with algorithms and all sorts to help us reach more people. We will be getting some guests back on very soon, so stay tuned. Like I said before, go and follow us on Instagram where you can have your say on who you want to come on the show, and also to submit questions to those when we announce it. We'll be announcing one over the next couple of weeks who will be coming on, so make sure you stay tuned. And yes, that's all the admin from my side. If you want to go and follow myself on Instagram, it's just at Johnny Dibble, and the same for YouTube, and Johnny Dibble Bass on TikTok. Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
Nice and easy. You can find me everywhere under That Guy on Bass. Although, I'm toying with a name change, you know.
Do you know what? I was going to talk to you about this.
Were you?
Yeah, because I was thinking... Well, I just feel like maybe...
I knew I shouldn't have put that picture on my Instagram story.
Yeah, we need to have a word.
We need to have a... One step the Council away. Of Bass Players would like a word with you.
You just get like warped into another reality.
Yeah. It's like Paul McCartney and John Paul Jones, Cliff
Burton. With cloaks on.
Yeah.
You have been summoned.
Oh, Chris, we've noticed that you've been... posting pictures of you playing guitar. That's my Paul McCartney, by the way.
That's pretty
Ringo.
Good.
Thank you.
Yes. But there we go. So people find you at That Guy on Bass.
Yes.
Everywhere in the world.
Correct. That Guy on Bass. Just because I posted a picture of a guitar on my Instagram story does not mean I'm never playing bass again. Loads of people message me about that going, oh, why are you not playing bass anymore? So I am playing bass as well. It's my job. It's just I've played guitar since the age of 12 and I'd like to like earn some money doing that as well, please. Yeah. You know, diversify.
So
it's
go and follow
you.
Chris at That Guy on Bass /guitar.
It won't be that. It won't be that. If anything, it would probably get changed to like kind of like Chris Horrocks Music, something like that. But that's not fun, whereas like That Guy on Bass is like a nice... It's a nice bit of branding. It's a good bit of SEO. I don't really want to lose that, but you know, that guy on guitar and bass doesn't really work.
That guy over there on the stage at the back playing guitar and all bass.
Perfect.
It's just, eventually it just changed to that guy.
Yeah. Wow.
That's that
he's,
guy.
He's that guy.
He's that guy.
Amazing. Anyway. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Ta-ta for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.